Good afternoon from Jyväskylä, Finland, to all of you on site and all around the world online. My name is Raili Hildén, and I'm from the University of Helsinki, from the Faculty of Educational Sciences, and I'm working there as an associate professor in language didactics and teacher education. And my great pleasure is to welcome you to the closing seminar of Digitala project that has been running since 2019 and is terminating at the end of August this year. Digitala, the term comes from Swedish, it's about digital talk, and our aim was to develop a digital tool for supporting speaking assessment in second languages and foreign languages. And we started with the realities of Finnish language education. And perhaps the first idea that we got was that we were missing a speaking part in the Finnish matriculation exam that is practically one or the only high stakes exam that we have in Finnish language education for all young people. And our second aim was to develop a pedagogical tool to provide feedback to students while they are practicing their oral language skills autonomously or independently from school education, probably. And all these aims take a collaboration between fields of science. And in our case, we approached our colleagues in speech technology and phonetics to complete these goals, to complete these ideas. This picture gallery shows who we are, the composition of the team. So we from the University of Helsinki are educationalists and language didactic specialists. And our colleagues at Aalto Universities are experts in speech technology and signal processing. And at the University of Jyväskylä, we have phonology and speech experts, and also language assessment. And to meet our aim and our need to develop the tool, so we started from the advancement of automatic speaking assessment that is based on automatic speech recognition and scoring system and the system for providing diagnostic feedback. Of course, we were not the only or the first ones to invent this kind of devices or this kind of ideas either. We have a lot of good examples all around the world. For example, the TOEFL IBT, Personal Test of English, Duolingo and Lingua Skills, just to mention a few of them, or perhaps the most referenced tests. And the way that we have gone through now during these project years, we started from planning the tasks for speaking to the various levels of Common European Framework of Reference. And then we asked the language students and language learners to complete these tasks and record their speech in the Moodle system. And we used the Moodle platform because it was familiar to all of us. And then we rated these samples also in the same system, analyzed the ratings for their reliability and consistency. And then we trained with this material, we trained the machine, and the samples were placed on the various levels according to the ratings. And we ended up with a user interface that then somehow fulfilled our wish to give feedback as well, and that is something that you people here on site also have the opportunity of trying out today. So the current functionalities of this Moodle application that we have created, it's not fully complete yet, but it's on a good way. Right now, at present, the teacher can create and edit the speaking tasks, and teachers also can explore student samples, listen to them, and view the automatic ratings given by the system, the automatic system. But the teacher is not entirely dependent on the machine. He or she can change their edit the ratings and give written feedback to their students. And the teachers also can download the rating reports from the Moodle system. The learners, again, are able to test their microphone and to record their tasks, view the task instructions and speak according to them. And when they are happy with their performance after having listened to it a couple of times verbally, so they can submit the sample for rating, and the system rates it. And after that, the student can see the rating the automatic rating given by the machine. And they can also view the complimentary feedback given by their teachers. the strengths and limitations are somehow familiar from current research from other systems. So the strengths, cover time and space independency, so that the students can train whenever they want and where they happen to be. And the system also spares teachers' rating time. Teacher doesn't have to be around all the time. And we are also proud of having created the first automated rating tool for domestic national languages, Finnish and Swedish, both of which are somehow considered as so-called under-resourced languages compared to word languages like English, where the speech technology is far more advanced. Our system is already capable of providing feedback on several components of oral proficiency. But there still are some limitations to our current system. The processing time is rather long, and the users need to wait quite a while, perhaps a couple of minutes, for the results to come. And the construct that we can measure right now is, of course, not the entire construct of speaking, but it's mostly like limited or restricted to measurable constructs, measurable traits, features of speech like fluency or pronunciation. And the machine ratings and feedback are dependent on the amount and quality of the training data, which is kind of limited, because in the course of this project we have not been able to record like thousands of hours of speech, but this is a good start. And we are also looking for the maintenance of the tool looking for some more financiation and resourcing for the project output to be maintained and developed further. We have completed quite a number of studies together with a team with the three universities. And you can find our references and our work in the articles that we have published.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody here in this hall and also online. My name is Ari Huhta. I come from the Center for Applied Language Studies at the University of Jyväskylä, where I work as a professor of language assessment, and in this project I'm a member of the of the Jyväskylä team. And it's my great pleasure to introduce briefly the three presentations in this second part of this closing seminar. And the three presentations are from the three partner universities, Helsinki, Aalto, and Jyväskylä, focusing on different aspects of the project, ranging from stakeholder beliefs, analysis of acoustic features of second language speech, and then finally about deep learning methods in learner language recognition and rating. And we will start by a presentation by Anna von Sansen and Riley Hilden from the University of Helsinki, who will be talking about stakeholder beliefs, biggest fear or a dream come true. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Ari. So my name is Anna von Sansen, and I have been working as a postdoctoral researcher in this project, and I will talk to you about stakeholder beliefs. And in this talk, stakeholder beliefs refer to L2 Finnish learners and their teachers. We have also had human raters as stakeholders. But first, I will start by describing the development stages that Riley mentioned already. Just a quick check, are the online participants seeing and hearing okay? Please. Are the slides okay? Okay, good. So, I will start by giving you an overview of the stages that we have taken when developing automated speaking assessment. First, we defined the speaking construct and drafted the speaking tasks and criteria to be used. The data collection took place during Finnish lessons, first remotely due to the pandemic, and then live in schools using Moodle. The speech samples were transcribed and rated by human raters. We analyzed the ratings then using many-facet RASH measurement in order to receive fairer scores and to explore how the scales and raters function, so to say. Colleagues at Aalto developed a speech recognizer that converts speech into text. And then several machine learning methods were then used to predict the human ratings, that is, automatically scoring the speech samples or speaking performances. And in the first version, we used the rating criteria that the human raters had used to produce automated feedback. And next, briefly about the speaking tasks that we used. So we used Moodle quiz module to collect the speech samples, first remotely, as I told you. And we had different test versions for proficiency levels, A1 and A2, beginners, and then one for B1 level speakers and one for B2 level speakers. And for B1, B2 level speakers, we used the curriculum for upper secondary education to define the goals, contents, and target level. And for A1 and A2 versions, we followed the goals of a university course targeting beginners of Finnish. And all the test formats included read-aloud tasks combined to semi-structured and open-ended tasks. And in the semi-structured tasks, the learner was, for example, asked to answer a question during a simulated phone call, time limit 15 seconds per response, for example. And in the open-ended task, then they included, for example, talking about a given topic for 1 minute or describing or comparing pictures. Is that clear now? Good. And the speaking tasks are available online, so if you Google Zenedo and Community Digitala, you will find all the materials, the criteria, the tasks, and everything there online. Good. And next, about the rating criteria. So this is you see here a list of the scales that the raters used. And we used level descriptors of the previous national core curriculum, as they are local applications of the common European framework. And they suit assessment purposes, as they describe learner skills in sufficient detail. And their detailed and analytical nature makes them applicable to be used in automated scoring and feedback. And finally, last year, together with four software engineering students, we designed a Moodle plugin for Finnish and Swedish learners and their teachers. And on the right here, you see workflow. On the left here, you see the workflow of the tool, and on the right, a screenshot of the report page. And so I will walk you through this workflow first, so have a look at the left side here. So first, when the system receives a speech sample, it uses automatic speech recognition to produce a transcript of the sample. Then the system produces automatic scores on selected dimensions of speech and finally shows the results to the learner. What you see on the right side here, the result page. And teachers have the possibility to comment on the scores produced by the machine. And finally, if teachers or researchers, as we are, are able to export the learner's speech samples together with the scores. And currently, the task types include read aloud and spontaneous speech up to 3 minutes. And more details are available in the user manual. I kindly ask Mike, our research assistant, to post the link to the user manual for our remote participants. And there's also a short video available on GitHub. Good. So, moving on. As in literature, also students in our studies highlighted the disadvantages and benefits of automated assessment. The benefits you see here, they include saving resources, providing immediate feedback, enabling self-regulated learning, and using same criteria when assessing different speakers or learners. In our studies, the stakeholders list following challenges, as you see here. They worry if others will hear what they say, or if in an high-stakes testing context, someone else would hear what they are speaking, but also if they talk over them in the same room. That's one concern of the students. And it is also important to notice that the students who participated in our studies, they were not used to talking to a computer. So that's something new and something strange and needs to be practiced more. And also this type of speaking tasks were new to them. They are more limited in nature, and they were performed as individual tasks instead of having a pair to talk with. And also the learners worried about data security and protection, as you see here, when recording their voices. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And on the right here, we have then some open issues listed. Some issues that divided learners' opinions. They include questions, for example, that will the test give a true picture of my okay, good. Some technical issues here, minor. I will continue. Good. Will the test give a good. this is what happens with machines. But yeah. A true picture of my language skills, and also does the machine have any prejudice against different speakers? And yeah, also some learners prefer talking to the computer, but some feel anxious. So this is dividing opinion. Good. Then moving on to teacher impressions. So this is in detail reported in one article of ours, but the idea behind the automated diagnostic feedback is, of course, that it could help learners by providing information on their strengths and weaknesses in their performance. And we interviewed some teachers in order to investigate their first impressions of the automated feedback. And first of all, the teachers see many possibilities for using this kind of tool already. And they were, for example, concerned about big issues such as negative washback that the automated feedback might have. And they were also, the teachers were interested in what's happening behind the scenes, so to speak, reliability of the tool and issues like that. All in all, they would already now like to use this tool to support language learning and teaching. Good. Then Riley, briefly about the perceptions.
Yes, I'm giving you a very, very brief overview of a comparative study between a teacher survey conducted in 2012 and compare it to something that we did in the very beginning of this year. The issue of speaking assessment at upper secondary education in Finland has been around several decades already, and we once in a while we always try to include that subtest to the matriculation exam, and then again we find that okay, it's not really practical. And one of those moments was 10 years ago, and we had another project focusing assessment of oral proficiency at upper secondary level, and in that context, we asked language teachers at that time what they think about oral language assessment in general, and also about the introduction of that subtest into the matriculation exam. And let's see how the landscape looks like. About the construct of language or oral language in both times, both points of time, we found that teachers value fluency, pronunciation, and interaction skills as the holy triad for criteria of speaking assessment. So that's something that is valued very highly by them, while grammar is considered less important. And the open-ended answers reflected the pertaining assets and dilemmas of speaking assessment in summative and high-stakes contexts, so that people are afraid and they have anxiety, and what about interaction and whatnot. I think that most of us are rather familiar with that discussion from different contexts. And then about the matriculation examination language test, if it should include a speaking component. Here we have the comparison in parallel rows and columns. The columns represent the different syllabus in Finnish language education. So English is the most advanced and most frequently studied. And then we have the mandatory second domestic language and some other languages that are common in our educational system. And with a very brief glance, you can see that the percentages of yes responses has roughly doubled during this 10 years, so that people, language teachers, are very positive for the idea that there should be a speaking component, because it is in the core curriculum, and we have the communicative language education ideal, which our current school leaving examination fails to represent. And then about, what about the technique then? Automated assessment of L2 speaking. How do language teachers feel about that? We didn't have the same question 10 years ago because technology was not that advanced at that time. But today we can see that people are mostly positive for that idea as well. So that why not automated speaking assessment if we can come up with a tool that is functional and that is user-friendly and everything that we are trying to strive at. And now we can proudly pronounce that Digitala project has produced such a tool, a prototype of such a tool. But as I mentioned earlier, so a lot of development is still needed. But today you will become more familiar with what has happened inside the machine and what kind of perspectives we have. I think that I will conclude from my part, and we welcome questions from far and near. So please, if there is anything we can complete our presentation with or something that is in your mind, on your minds, please let me know. How about the distant participants? Has anyone given a stance?
And these QR codes go to a video of the Moodle plugin that we have produced and also the materials available on Zenedo. So if you want to scan one, please, questions.
At the moment there is just one general question, and the viewers online are asking if the slides are going to be presented to them.
Did I hear correctly? The question was if the slides will be available later on.
Yes.
Yeah, we will. We can publish the slides as PDF on our website in the same news item that we have online. Is that okay with everyone? Good.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the people here in the hall? Just checking, what's the latter question about the teachers' reactions or feelings about the technology and assessment automated? Was that in the connection of matriculation examination or more generally?
More generally. But of course, there was a connection that people usually are already aware because of our publications and writings that the only practical way to implement that kind of mass, large-scale assessment of speaking must somehow be supported by technology, so that they were connected, but we were not directly asking about.
Any other questions at the moment? Please, Dimitri.
This is a great, great study that you did on teachers' beliefs, and hence, you know me being pedantic about stuff. Do you differentiate between beliefs, perceptions, experiences? Because I've seen all these keywords in your slides, right? Versus, you know, the title being beliefs, as they sort of were. To me, these are pretty different things.
Yes, that was a good question. And, we have used those terms interchangeably here, not to focus too much about the conceptual diversities between them. We are aware of all the fact that there are many different definitions, and there are distinctions between those constructs. And the the role of knowing and doing and having personal experience of something is very different, but we have just chosen to use them as in a very popular general way. So we can perhaps be back into that question in some of our future articles and take it like more accurately. So thank you for the reminder.
Okay, we may have time for one very quick question or comment before moving on to the next presentation.
We have one online, I'm not sure.
There's a second question online. How would you assess Digitala's performance as regards prosodic features assessment?
That might be, we might leave that for Heini to answer, since Heini's and Mikko's presentation is about acoustic features of L2 Swedish and Finnish. So maybe you could answer this one also.
Yeah, so we'll keep that question in mind for Heini, yeah, and Mikko afterwards. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
Okay, so next we will have a team from our local university of Jyväskylä here, Heini Kallio and Mikko Kuronen. Heini will be talking, giving this talk about acoustic features of Swedish and Finnish second language speech. Please, Heini.
Voitko näyttää ihan samalta? Okay. Hello everyone here and online. My name is Heini Kallio and I've been working as a postdoc in the Digitala project for a couple of years now. My background is in phonetics and I will be today shortly representing some of our research results from the phonetic side, which we've been doing with Mikko Kuronen and Maria Kautonen and a couple of research assistants as well. And we'll see whether we can answer this question about the performance of prosody assessment. the acoustic features we've been studying includes mainly features related to speech fluency and prosody, but yeah. I will go forward, so limited amount of time for this. First, I will talk a little bit about predicting L2 Swedish fluency and proficiency, and also a little bit about pronunciation. Here's a freshly published article, which was published in Speech Communication Journal this year, about prosody and fluency of Finland Swedish as a second language, investigating global parameters for automatic speaking assessment. And for those who are not familiar with Finland Swedish, it is a variety of Swedish spoken in Finland and one of the two official languages here. And compared to standard Swedish spoken in Sweden, Finland Swedish has its own segmental and prosodic characteristics. And as far as we know, this is the first study to study prosody and fluency of Finland Swedish as a second language and relate those acoustic features to assessments of fluency and proficiency and pronunciation. Because it's more common in phonetic studies If you connect acoustic features to human assessment, you usually study only one language skill dimension at a time, like proficiency or fluency or pronunciation. But here our motivation was to check whether these parameters are related to any of these or all of these dimensions in order to see what could be integrated in the automatic assessment or how could we explain the automatic assessment system. And the data was 265 speech samples. We had 30 L1, so native Swedish, Finland Swedish speakers, samples as well. Most of the samples were non-native speakers, Finnish high school students speaking Swedish, because it's a compulsory subject in schools here. They were semi-spontaneous narrative speech, and the task assignment had a picture and or written prompt. We decided to discard very short samples because these global features are not very reliable to compute from very short samples. Very shortly about the parameters, I will not go these through in detail because we don't have much time. I want to focus on some of the interesting results we've got from this. But we had a few features related to F0 change and a few features related to speech rhythm, or they have usually been connected to speech rhythm, and then a bunch of fluency-related features there. And we used multiple linear regression models for predicting human ratings of proficiency, fluency, and pronunciation. And the results were like this. So for the proficiency model, our features explained 33% of the variation in the ratings. What was not very surprising is that speech rate was one of the most important features there. But what was interesting is that the frequency of silent pauses in the speech sample was even more significant than the speech rate itself. So the more there were silent pauses in the speech sample, the lower the proficiency rating was. What was also interesting is that the F0 slope contributed to the prediction, although it was not statistically significant. Yes. And also the amount of wrong language segment indicated lower proficiency. It's the WL ratio there. WL stands for wrong language. So these speech samples had quite a lot of these Finnish-speaking students speaking some other language than Swedish because they were maybe more proficient in English or some other language than Swedish. So we computed that as well. Okay. For the fluency model, what I find interesting here is that the ratio of field pauses, which means hesitations basically in speech, so the relative amount of hesitations was a significant predictor there together with speech rate. But also the N triangle S means standard deviation of syllable duration, which tells about how much they varied their syllable duration, basically, in the speech samples, that also became a significant predictor of fluency. And the model predicted 44% of the rating variation. And not so surprisingly, the pronunciation model was not very good. It only predicted 10% of the variation of the ratings. The frequency of wrong language segments was a very important feature. But still, so basically with these features, we cannot predict pronunciation, but it explains quite nicely the fluency. And so a couple of plots from the interesting features, which is mean F0 slope and the mean standard deviation of syllable duration. So we also looked at the data, or the group the data, by their proficiency level and fluency level. And here you can see that fluency, or from the left plot, you can see that the speakers within fluency category 1 and fluency category 3 could be distinguished by their mean F0 slope. So it's something that tells something about how they use their fundamental frequency when speaking Swedish. And the higher fluency speakers were closer to the native speakers, which is on the rightmost box plot with the light green. Those are the native speakers. And then on the right plot, there's the mean standard deviation of syllable duration. And there you can see that the least fluent speakers were distinguished from the semi-fluent speakers, interestingly, and also from the native speakers. But then again, in fluency category 3, they were not so well distinguished from other categories. So something interesting is happening in these syllable durations of L2 Swedish speakers, and it should be looked deeper into what is going on there. And these are probably those more language-specific features than, for example, the fluency features, which you can see here, some of the results. On the left, there's articulation rate and the fluency categories, and then there's speech rate and also the rate of silent pauses in the sample. And you can see that all the speaker groups are very well distinguished from each other. And it's not very surprising. These are very universal parameters that are good characteristics of fluency, speech fluency. Okay. Do you have any questions from the Swedish data so far? Or the Swedish? Yeah. I have a few minutes to go through our Finnish studies, which is unfortunate, because there are more of those, but I will try to be quick. So with L2 Finnish data, we've mainly focused on measuring fluency, and we've tried out several different models there. And mostly related to those fluency measures. And there has been a gap in research of Finnish as a second language when it comes to acoustically analyzed fluency. And actually, there is still also a gap in research on native Finnish speech as well, but let's go to that a little bit later. For this data, we had 200 speech samples from two different sets, basically. We have adult learners of Finnish, and then we had a smaller set of high school learners of Finnish. And we used Digitalis human ratings for fluency and proficiency here, since we already saw that these fluency features, they cannot be used for predicting pronunciation. But some of them seem to be related to proficiency. And for those who are familiar with PROT, you can see that we've done a lot of annotation work here. I will not go this through in detail here. But we annotated a lot of different fluency features there and then computed a bunch of parameters. And here are some examples of them. These features here are related to language-specific syntax, and they are more specific fluency parameters. So we wanted to see whether the location of pauses in speech samples has some effect on the prediction of fluency. And then we also use some more global fluency parameters to compete with the speech rate. And here we basically combined all pauses and hesitations and corrections and repetitions into the same parameter. And altogether, we had 44 fluency-related parameters, and we also used multiple linear regression models for that. And so about the contribution of pause location parameters. Interestingly, the pause location parameters improved the predictive power of the proficiency model better than the fluency model. So like half of the parameters in the proficiency model were related to pause locations, which was interesting, and only one, yeah, the fluency model improved only a little bit. And I wanted to show you these plots very quickly because it says something about the contribution of the pause location parameters, that their relevance and their significance in the models basically depend on the speech data. So the blue ones are the high school students, and the red ones are the adult learners. And you can see that in the blue ones, which is the smaller data, if you have one outlier, it affects a lot in the lower plot. But then the contribution of the global parameters is more clear. So the disfluency ratio is the lowest plot there, and you can see a clear tendency that more disfluencies there are, the lower the proficiency, etc. But about the creakiness, we also wanted to try to measure creak in these L2 Finnish samples, because it is said that Finnish people creak a lot. So I thought maybe the more proficient Finnish speakers also creak a lot. But as you can see, there were not many. It's the upright corner. So there were not many speakers who used creaky voice in the Finnish learners. But here are my take-home messages from our studies. So the potential here is that if we could combine automatic pause or hesitation detection with some sort of syntactic parser, maybe we could define the location of pauses and hesitations and add that to the fluency model to make it more accurate. And also, if we are able to recognize and separate target language words from all other stuff in the speech, like hesitations and repetitions and so on, that could also maybe we can make a more efficient fluency model as well. And then, well, the issues are that if we have very low proficiency speakers, they may not produce linguistic phrases at all, so then the location of pauses is very difficult to define. And also the data-based bias is a very important issue. So whatever is present in the data we have may become relevant. So maybe we can think about context-specific assessment models, which is used in some of the international systems. And also, yeah, I want to get back to this, that in the Finnish L2 studies, we did not have a reference group of L1 Finnish at all. So these are some phenomena that should be studied also in L1 Finnish. So we could say that these phenomena are present in Finnish in general. Okay, I'm sorry, I used a little bit more time than I should have maybe, but and here are some references. And I'm ready to take some questions, if we still have time for that.
Thank you, Heidi. We have time for one or two questions. One thing, because there was this question about the contribution of prosody to how was it actually phrased?
How would you assess Digitala's performance as regards prosodic features assessment?
Is it so that actually, because here you had actually annotated the fluency features by hand, so that's not yet implemented in Digitala, but can you say something?
Well, I'm sure Jaroslav will have more to say about this, but we do have some prosodic features also integrated, like this pairwise variability index, which is usually related to speech rhythm, which is related to speech prosody. and also some F0 features, but I don't think we have F0 slope there, and I don't think we neither have this standard deviation of syllable duration. And we were actually, with the Finland-Swedish L2 data, we were expecting that the pairwise variability index would have become a significant predictor in fluency or pronunciation, but it did not. Instead, the standard deviation of syllable duration, it outran the NPVI, which was a surprise for us. So maybe, yeah, it should be studied further to figure out what is going on there in the syllable durations of the Finland-Swedish speakers. Because Finland-Swedish, it's different from Sweden-Swedish, and it's prosodically very close to Finnish. So, but still, the word and sentence stress production is different due to Swedish grammar. So we should look into that more deeply, what's going on there.
So digital has taken some steps towards that direction, but there's still
we are still using these kind of standard parameters that have been used in other systems as well. But these are just new studies that could give up more ideas for the language-specific models, maybe.
Any other questions? Quick ones? Yeah, please.
I was wondering, Heini, if there are language teachers online or here present, so what would you want to say to them? Any take-home messages for teachers?
Wow. What would you like to say to them? I would say that if you don't yet teach prosody in your target language, start doing that now, because it's very important. it's not only the single words that we produce and pronounce, but it's how we combine the words together and how we produce the full sentences and speech utterances. And of course, we cannot expect perfect pronunciation in terms of words or segments or prosodically either, but it's all about the intelligibility, which is integrated in our rating criteria. So.
Okay. Thank you, Heini.
Thank you.
And next we have the final third presentation in this section by team from Aalto University, Jaroslav Getman, Ekaterina Vosko-Bojnik, and Mikko Kurima. And it's going to be Jaroslav who's going to give the talk with the title Deep Learning Methods in L2 Low Resource Speech Recognition and Rating. Please.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jaroslav Getman, and I am working at Mikko Kurima's group at Aalto University. And and I'll introduce you the technical aspects of our automatic speaking assessment systems. So, as you can see from the diagram, our automatic assessment systems consist of four individual evaluators covering different aspects of L2 speakers' proficiency, such as test completion, lexical range and accuracy, pronunciation and fluency. And we have a separate evaluator which predicts the overall proficiency level or the CFR holistic level. But apart from that, our system needs to know what the L2 speaker said. So for that purposes, we developed automatic speech recognition systems for L2 speech of Finland, Swedish, and Finnish. As a model architecture, we used the recently developed Wave2Vec2 models. Those models are pre-trained on large amounts of unlabeled or untranscribed speech, dozens to hundreds of thousands of hours. And at this stage, these models are not able to perform automatic speech recognition, but instead they learn some general acoustic patterns or characteristics of speech, which makes it possible to fine-tune these models for automatic speech recognition using only a limited amount of transcribed speech data. And moreover, these systems are easy to adapt to a target domain. So in our experiments, we first fine-tuned our models for L1s on L1 speech and then continuously fine-tune it on the target L2 domain. And we didn't use any external language model to prevent from unintentional correcting students' mistakes. So we were interested in what the student were actually saying rather than what the students tried to say. And in our experiments, we used 14 hours of Finnish data and almost 6 hours of L2 Finland-Swedish data to train the ASS systems. And we used the K-fold cross-validation technique in order to have test results on the whole data set. For example, for ASR, we trained four subsystems and aggregated the test set results. In total, our ASR systems achieved 22% word error rate and 7% character error rate for Finnish, and 18% word error rate and 9% character error rate for Swedish. The diagrams on the right illustrate the distribution of samples depending on the proficiency level and the word and character error rate of our ASI systems for the corresponding levels. And as you can see from the curves, the more proficient the speaker is, the lower is the word and character error rate for both Swedish and Finnish. The only exception is a slight increase in word and character error rate for Finnish for level C2. The most likely explanation for such behavior is that C2 students use two complex grammatical and lexical structures and very rare words, making it difficult for an ASR system to correctly recognize those utterances. Next, let's move to the holistic score predictor. By the way, as you can see from the diagrams, our data sets are heavily imbalanced towards the intermediate level speakers, especially for Swedish data. And as a result, we filtered out the underrepresented classes. And for Swedish, we trained a classifier to distinguish between four holistic levels, and for Finnish, we had a six class classification problem. As training inputs, we used some manually extracted lexical fluency and pronunciation features. Some of them were introduced by Heini. And in addition, we used deep acoustic representations from our ASR model. In the diagram, they are named as hidden representations. As mentioned previously, those hidden representations learned by Wave2Vec2 network contain some general acoustic properties embedded or acoustic patterns of speech. And based on our experiments, those deep representations improved the classification performance for the rating systems. So we concatenated them with the handcrafted ones. And as a classifier for each dimension and also for the holistic score, we used six-layer deep neural networks. And for Finnish, the CFR rating model achieved 46% accuracy and 39% F1 score. And here you can see the confusion matrix of the results, where horizontal axis represents the predicted class or predicted level, and the vertical axis represents the reference or the true label. For example, take a look at the let's say, B2 level. Our system predicts B2 samples. So it predicts 14% of them as B1, 45% as B2, and 33% as C1. So those numbers are just ratios. And as you can see from the confusion matrix, our model is mostly confusing between neighboring classes. For example, for level B1 samples, the predictions are almost equally distributed between levels A2, B1, and B2. And as you can see from the zeros on the corners, the system learned to perfectly or almost perfectly distinguish between the extreme levels. And similarly for Swedish, the model confuses between neighboring classes. But apart from that, if you look at the vertical axis, you can see that this model mostly predicts this proficiency level as A2 or B1. And that's an expected behavior because going back to the distribution, you can see that levels A2 and B1 are overrepresented compared to other levels. And to partially mitigate the imbalance issue for Swedish data, we are currently collecting and annotating more Swedish samples of beginner students. And finally, here are the full results for all the four dimensions and the holistic one. But let's focus on the human-to-human versus machine-to-human performance. So we measured how well humans agree to each other when rating the samples and how machine agrees to the average score by multiple human raters. And we measured the Pearson correlation and Cohen's Kappa scores. And our systems mostly outperform humans in terms of agreement for all dimensions except for lexicogrammatical one. And we got extremely good scores for the general holistic proficiency predictor. And similarly for Swedish, all systems outperformed humans in terms of agreement except for lexicogrammatical dimension. To conclude, in this project, we developed L2 ASR systems for Finland, Swedish, and Finnish. And we also developed four individual evaluator systems focusing on different aspects of L2 speakers' proficiency, as well as overall rating system. And as can be noticed from the results, some systems might have quite low agreement with human raters, but for these dimensions, the degree of human-to-human agreement is often even lower. So as one of future research directions, we are planning to perform some model compression techniques. Those of you who have tested out our plugin have noticed that it's quite slow. So currently our neural models are quite huge. So we would like to perform some model compression or distillation techniques to make them smaller and faster. And finally, we are planning to update the Swedish models after we receive the human ratings for the beginner level samples. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaroslav. Any immediate questions or comments? online or here. What do you think what would be the effect of trying to increase human-to-human agreement here? I mean, because you have compared the is there kind of a direct sort of benefit from trying to get humans agree more with each other? When the basis of comparison is the kind of an average human rating, basically that's simply one figure. But of course, it can be problematic if there's a lot of variation among the humans, of course.
Yeah, I think the variation between human scores was is a problem for a neural network, because if the humans do not agree to each other, what would be the gold label for the model? That's the question. So that's why we average the scores, and we make the model imitate some average human rater. But if the humans agree more, then we can choose just either of scores and let the model learn to imitate a particular human rater.
So actually it would be not a useful thing to do to actually try to include in the model all the different human raters, but rather let use some sort of average of them, if I get it right. So it's better to use one sort of average rather than try to include a wider range of different types of ratings there.
Well, in general, it's easier to teach the model to imitate some single human or an average human rather than multiple humans.
Yeah. So it's kind of a computational challenge.
It's kind of computational challenge.
So there are some questions from our online participants. Do you think the fact that the system struggles with B1 and B2 is characteristic of all languages, or just Finnish and Swedish? Because that's also something that human raters usually struggle with in English too.
Sorry, could you repeat that again?
Yes. Do you think the fact that the system struggles with B1 and B2 is characteristic of all languages, or just Finnish and Swedish? Because that's also something that human raters usually struggle with in English.
I think that's mostly related to the amount of data for that levels. So for Finnish, we partially mitigated that issue by collecting data from students with various backgrounds. For Finnish, we collected the beginner level samples from university students, as well as bilingual students and immigrants and Swedes learning Finnish. So that's why we have a more balanced distribution, and as a result, we get relatively high scores even for B1 and B2 samples. So it's more of a question about the amount of training data. So it's not language specific.
I could also comment that from the more general assessment perspective is that everybody who has done assessment rating of speaking or writing has noticed that it's fairly easy to spot particularly weak performance and a very good one, and it's in the middle that where you have struggled to actually think about whether this is B1 or B2. So I think that's a kind of a genuine decision challenge, and of course here it happens that so most of the data comes from that range. So that's
I was wondering, it's not like a question to you, but actually to the whole digital team. So that's I was kind of a bit hesitant to ask it now. rating is one thing, right? When you train the model on whichever scale. The other thing which I think could be a bit more interesting, well, I don't know if that's interesting to you, is to approach that from more diagnostic performance, because I think you can train the model, there will be like more agreement amongst the raters what regards what could be trained with the particular speech samples, you know, what sort of challenges they have, right, the learners have, and you know, kind of from a more diagnostic perspective, right, rather than a scale, right, and I think that would be quite an interesting thing to look at also in terms of training the model, you know, right, because there are particular features which you saw that would kind of separate across the proficiency levels as well, right? So I wonder if that could be one interesting thing that you could take, or a task that you could take, if you know what I mean. Right. So rather than training to differentiate across the proficiency level, whichever scale it is, right, which I think it would be like notoriously difficult also for human raters, and whether we're, and like, are there at some day or not is a different question. But approach it or tackle the or the challenge from a different perspective. You know, what is it that could be focused on in a particular speech sample in terms of the teaching, the learning, training, development of learners? This one. And that's a different question than a scale.
Yeah. To some, I mean, this is not the direct answer to that. To some extent, there has been an analytical rating of certain dimensions, but that's on a more specific scale, and there's been training of the models for fluency and pronunciation and so on. But if you mean that looking at the samples at the more detailed way, perhaps would be one way to make use of that. So perhaps the question is how to spot interesting cases for further analysis, perhaps. Could be, yeah. But certainly, well, we need to discuss that more. Okay, if there are no questions online, I think it's time for a coffee break before we have a panel discussion with people from here and also from abroad via internet, and we have Mikko Kuriman and myself will be in the panel, Heini will be chairing it, and then we will have Helmer Strick and Talia Isaacs as international participants in the panel, and we will be discussing the challenges and advantages of automated assessment of spoken skills in high-stakes contexts. But we'll start that at exactly 5 o'clock. Yeah, five o'clock. So in about half an hour. But we will keep we won't interrupt the connection. But we'll invite the online participants to join us again at 5 o'clock, and we'll have here a coffee break before that. Okay, thank you, everybody.
It's 5 p.m. in Finland, and so welcome to the digital seminar. The last part of it, we are going to have a panel discussion on the topic that what are the challenges and advantages of automatic assessment of spoken language skills in high-stakes contexts. And we have online, we have two discussants. We have Talia Isaacs, Associate Professor of Applied Linguistics and Teaching English to Speakers of Other Languages from University College London. Welcome. And we have Helmer Strick, an associate professor, Center for Language Studies and Department of Language and Communication, Radboud University, Nijmegen. I'm sorry about my Dutch pronunciation. Not sure if that went right. But warmly welcome, both of you. And here on site, we have Professor Ari Huhta from University of Jyväskylä, professor in language assessment and education, and Professor Mikko Kurimo from Aalto University, professor in speech and language processing. And well, first, I would like our guest speakers to shortly introduce yourselves, or rather your perspectives on automatic assessment of spoken language skills. So what are your perspectives on that?
Who should start? Ladies first.
I'm happy to go first. Just to say I'm really pleased that there's a discussion about this. So I'll bring some of my perspective just as a form of summary, because I think you were interested in talking about challenges and advantages of automated assessment in speaking in particular. Of course, we rely on technology for speech. Speech is transient. I mean, we need technology even to play back and record speech and to render it something that is quantifiable. Otherwise, it's ephemeral. And so we've long been using technology, of course, in the context of speaking assessment. Having now assessments that are fully automated, that is machine delivered and machine scored for high stakes purposes, is a relatively new thing. I mean, this is sort of 21st century that this has come into high stakes assessments for language proficiency and then used for purposes that are quite consequential to test takers' lives, decisions about getting into university or getting a job they want, and so on and so forth. So there are now in the assessment market, as you know, tests that are, like IELTS, that are administered by humans and then scored by human raters. And then on the other end of the continuum, you have tests that are completely, scored by algorithms. Of course, they're trained, and there is a black box a little bit, so we don't know exactly always what criteria are being used to score that assessment. I think also, we should be mindful, of course, there are a lot of different options now, and, I'll talk about advantages in a second, but I think that in thinking about speaking in real-world contexts, there will always be a role, or there should always be some role for human interlocutors as the arbiter of what they do and don't understand. Now, of course, we might be communicating more and more with robots in the future, spoken dialogue systems, and things are ever-changing, but I think that there should be a place for all different variety of assessments. And of course, once you've developed that algorithm that can score the speech, the assessment can be much, much cheaper, right? If it's fully done by machine, right? It's logistically simpler. You don't have to have raters. Certainly, you don't have to have an examiner involved in also conducting the assessment one-on-one. They can speak directly into a machine and then have that scored. Another advantage, of course, is that it's what we call rater effects, right? That individual examiners might be subject to some form of bias, and that gets ironed out and kind of averaged out, because there is bias when you train AI systems. These are trained on a particular data set that, of course, comes from and has ingrained with it biases within a given community or society. However, individual rater idiosyncrasies, so individual differences in one examiner or two examiners, if you have two people rating a speech sample, kind of get averaged out if it's over a much larger sample of listeners or human evaluators. There's always the question of what should be the appropriate standard. Is a native speaker standard appropriate? The conversations about standard language are very relevant also to machine scoring. Often the algorithms are trained on a normed sample of native speakers, whatever that means, and then of course deviances relative to the native speaker norm are what count as kind of errors. And so I think that these things need to be made transparent by testing bodies, but there also needs to be some thought about the appropriateness of the standards and the kind of methods of training these algorithms. I mean, you have the possibility, and Helmer's research shows this, of rapid real-time feedback provision. There's also, of course, the idea of being able to access assessments very quickly, but also from remote destinations where you might not have human evaluators available in a certain part of the world who can assess, for example, a particular target language. So, there are all sorts of advantages, but there are lots of disadvantages. So, the reductionist approach, thinking about the construct and matters of validity, I think, are really important here. When you're only measuring things that the machine is good at, for example, you want to look at somebody's speaking ability, then in effect, the machine can only handle pronunciation features, specifically features to do with individual vowel and consonant sounds and some fluency features and very limited, maybe, vocabulary. That is a much narrower construct than one where you might have interaction with an interlocutor, different interactional patterns. Appropriateness is something that is very difficult, or pragmatic competence. There are other aspects as well that can be very, very difficult for machines to be able to score well, and even things like intonation. And so you end up having, a very narrow speaking construct, and you see that with some of the high-stakes tests, it's kind of like we're going back to audiolingualism and grammar translation in terms of the way that things are being tested. It sort of lends itself to washback effects of rote learning and decontextualized sort of discrete point items. And this is a problem. Of course, technology is evolving, and there are improvements being made, so this is a moving field. But still, I think that certainly you've got a much narrower speaking construct than you would have with other speaking assessment types. There are other matters as well, but I think that's the major one that I would want to point out. And I've probably talked over time now, so I'm here curious to hear Helmer's perspective. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, thanks for the presentations this afternoon. I think it's an interesting project, and I see many interesting results already, and hopefully it will be used in the future. Okay, as you know, we have four skills, two perceptive and two productive, and it's easier, very generally speaking, training and testing productive skills is more complex than perceptive skills, we know this. And speaking is more complex than writing. And I also teach a call course, and each year I ask my students to look for call systems on speaking, good quality call systems, and they're always disappointed, because there are not many good call systems out there, good quality call systems for training. And of course, there are less systems for testing than for training, and they are more difficult to evaluate. But the ones that I've evaluated myself, they are also quite limited. And Talia already mentioned this. The problem, of course, is what is correct and what is incorrect. Something like standard language doesn't exist in most countries. And there is a lot of variation within the, let's say, the native language. So it's very difficult to define what is correct and incorrect, to find borders. If you develop software, you need thresholds. But where do you put the thresholds? And if we look at spontaneous native speech, spontaneous native speech is very strange. It often isn't grammatical. It's full of disfluencies. It's full of restarts, repairs. So is everything natives do, is that correct? Is that the standard? That's quite problematic then. And then, of course, spoken language has so many different aspects. Today, most of the presentations were about prosody and fluency, I heard. Of course, you have segmental phonemes, but you also have things like intelligibility, comprehensibility, naturalness, for instance, speech synthesis, this is a big issue. Speech synthesis can be correct, but not natural. And then we have lexicon and we have formulaic language. A lot of our native language consists of idioms, multi-word expressions, and all these kinds of formulaic language, which is very problematic for non-natives. And that's only the speaking part, but of course, speaking should be evaluated. It's communication. It's about communication. And then it has to be unprepared, spontaneous, extemporaneous. I've seen many international students in my classes who have extremely high TOEFL scores, but have a problem communicating in English. That could also have some other reasons, but a high score on a TOEFL, for instance, TOEFL score doesn't mean that you can communicate well. Something that has already been mentioned in presentations today and also by Talia is that we have artificial intelligence, performance goes up, but they are black boxes. And if you do a high-stakes test, you should be able to explain why somebody passes, but especially why somebody fails a test, of course. So then you should... Should it be completely automatic? I wonder if that's already possible. I think that we can use automatic scores to help humans do tests, but a complete automatic test, I have doubts about it. So that's roughly. So I think current technology is improving. And yes, we can have technology make a report with a lot of interesting data in there, prosodic, fluency-related data, pronunciation-related data. And then I think preferably a human or one or two humans should use these data and then come up with the final results for the test. That's what my perspective on this.
Thank you very much, Professors Isaacson Strick. That was, do you, Ari Huhta and Mikko Kurimo would also like to have a short turn here.
Okay, can you now hear me?
Yes, very
okay,
well.
Great, so we just changed tables. My own background is such that my involvement in the digital project is the first time I'm involved in automated speech recognition and automated assessment of speaking. I worked earlier on in my career in designing rating scales for human raters, and then I've later on done some work with automated assessment of, or actually analysis of learner writing. So what I would like to start with is that my own background is more in the kind of a formative type of assessment. So there I can see a lot of applications for automated analysis of speaking and writing. But when it comes to the high stakes assessment, it's much more complex and difficult. And one of I think the decision to actually use automated assessment of speaking or writing in a high-stake context, assuming that it's not a resource issue, which it definitely is also a question of the context and perhaps the kind of impact we want to have. In one context here in our country, where we have a final school leaving examination, which has where the language exams have always lacked the speaking component. I would think that even a partially functioning automated speaking assessment system that would not work independently, but in support of human raters, would be potentially useful if that means that by using that system, we would be able to introduce a speaking component into this final examination, which is so far is lacking. So it may be that even with the restricted construct that can be assessed, it may be that actually that would still be useful in that kind of a context. Then I'm thinking of another context where it's much more difficult to say whether it actually makes sense to even introduce as an automated assessment, and that is another examination that we have, which is national certificates of proficiency, which is a examination for adult learners, and it covers 8 or 9 languages. So the question is, what would be the impact and meaningfulness of introducing automated assessment into one or two of the languages there, but not do that for the others? Because I think that would create an interesting situation in terms of imbalance of various sorts. So I think that the context and the intended impact might be an important factor in designing when and whether to actually go for automated assessment. And then another aspect of this construct sort of issue is that are the tasks. I mean, what is the range of tasks that should be used or could be used with automated assessment, and what are those? What are the implications of that to what can be assessed automatically versus what perhaps human raters could assess? So that's perhaps my 2 cents about this at this moment.
Yeah, maybe I can say as well. As my name is Mikko Kuriman, professor in speech and language processing at Aalto University. So my background is in automatic speech recognition and speech processing language modeling, but not so much about in assessing speaking skills. So what I've learned a lot during this project, and based on that, I think the biggest challenge is maybe not in the engineering side. So even though our system works fairly well now, but it's not that robust, so there is room for improvement. But still, I can see that we are advanced quite a lot. And if we continue like this, we get more data. Maybe we can sort these bias issues and also some robustness issues with just getting more data. But then are these kind of human factors, which I consider the most challenging thing. So even after all this training that we give to our raters, they still disagree. And then our poor machine tries to learn that why this is sometimes good and sometimes bad. And then we just take some averages, weighted averages or unweighted averages, and try to learn those averages, which certainly gives some noise to the system. That is it so kind of how can we train the reviewers better, or how can we get more reviewers? Maybe that helps if we can model it as a distribution instead of individuals, but that's kind of challenge that I'm viewing.
Okay. I'll come to this side. I think bias is one of the keywords that every one of you used at least once in your turns. And I would like to ask about this possible rater bias and this human factor. What do you think that automatic methods and artificial intelligence could give to improving the assessment reliability within humans in general? How do you think that we could kind of train the raters or human assessors with the help of artificial intelligence?
So maybe
is
I can
question to whom?
Or maybe Helmer, if you want to start.
Yes. So, yeah, I wonder if this is the right question. So when this presentation, I think this was the last presentation, the human-to-human agreements were low, and the machine to average humans were higher. So the question is, should we train the reviewers or should we use scores, ratings on which the humans do agree? There are some. So for instance, recently we have been looking at, in the Netherlands and in many countries, in fact, if children learn to read, A test they often do is the number of words correct per minute. And we asked many teachers to do this, and we don't know what they do. We have no clue at all, but their agreement between within them and between them is extremely high. Of course, this is a simple measure, but I think we should first try to look for measures, scores, ratings that humans do agree on. Because indeed, what we always do is, if we train machine classifiers, artificial intelligence, we use as benchmark, as reference, human scores. We don't have better. Sometimes I wonder if the humans are better than the machines, but this is the only thing we can do. We can use humans as the reference. Then I think it's the best thing to start with scores, ratings that humans do agree on.
Yes, that's definitely.
Yeah, I was nodding a lot at Helmer's response. I think having benchmark samples and choosing those appropriately are important. Also, I mean, I think there are validity questions as well, of course, about what, I mean, are the raters being trained in the first instance about what it is that they should be attending to? Is there some kind of, what are the training? Are they given benchmark samples to listen to, for example? And then do they have some kind of training? I mean, I missed those presentations, but those are the sorts of questions I would be asking. I mean, you would expect to have some kind of norming sessions and consensus building on, you know, what the different criteria are that should be evaluated and the aspects of the performance that are relevant to the construct and those that are extraneous. But just to bring in that, I agree with Helmer's point as well, though, from earlier about the importance of hybrid, machine and human scoring. I think that there should be a place for both. I'm also quite worried about fully automated assessments for speaking. And Larry Davis and Spiros Papagiorgiou at ETS have written an article on how, the approach is for TOEFL IBT to look at these things. So, I think that is just a point I wanted to stick in. Thank you.
I was just thinking that because I'm sort of so very much interested in sort of collaboration between a machine and a human rater, and actually if we for the moment forget the idea of the machine doing kind of an independent scoring in a way that it's somehow automatically taken into account or replacing human ratings, but can the automated analysis tool be a useful rater training device? I'm thinking of that because the, for example, would it be useful for a human rater to get a machine estimation of, let's say, lexical richness of a piece of writing or a spoken performance? Or indices of syntactic complexity, or some things that are quite difficult for human raters perhaps to systematically evaluate, but the machine can do. I mean, certain things that the machine can do fairly sort of reliably, and feed that as a kind of an information to the human rater. As a kind of a reminder, okay, that this performance has these characteristics, and then it's up to the human rater, and of course, depending on the system, how they are trained, to consider that in a particular way as supporting the human rater's final decision. So I'm thinking that might be a useful way of introducing automated analysis into a high-stake scoring. Not necessarily meaning that the automated analysis is a kind of an automatic part of a certain decision making, but it's something that the human rater should consider because that's a kind of an objective view to the performance, and then of course it's up to the human rater to make unavoidably subjective final decision about how to use that information.
So are you meaning like something that if you take some nuclear power station, there is a controller who has a big screen and there are lots of kind of devices that measure different things. Mm. And then when he sees that something is going wrong, then he sees that, okay, that's something. Or maybe he makes his decision based on several of these meters, what they are looking at the same time.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy.
So maybe the kind of skill is there still in the human, but it just uses these different devices.
Yeah.
But maybe it can get even too difficult still if there are lots of devices.
So it must be some key aspects of the performance that should or could be considered by the human rater.
No, I think I agree with that. So, for instance, the machine, a lot of the measures that were mentioned in the presentations this afternoon, like rate of speech, articulation rate, filled pauses, silent pauses, this is something that the machine can measure easily. Mm. And if you have a report with these numbers and you have, the average and the standard deviation within the population, this can help you evaluate. It's not the only thing, but it can help you. It's a bit, of course, like we have also found this in our research, that rate of speech is a very good predictor of proficiency level. It's a bit strange, of course. Yeah, well, it's logical because you start speaking faster if you're more proficient. But it's strange to use that as the only measure or something like that. But if it's part of a set of measures that a human can use to evaluate the speech of a learner, I think that can be useful.
Monologic tasks, though. Obviously, if you have a task that's dialogic with an interlocutor, then that becomes something that you can't use.
Do we have any questions from the audience or from our online viewers at the moment?
Someone is typing something, but it's...
Okay, we'll wait for that. Anybody from the present audience here? Do you have anything in your minds?
Nothing yet. Well, maybe I will ask the one of the obvious questions, but... what do you think are the prospects of automatic speech assessments? So where do you see automatic second or foreign language assessment is in, globally, but also in areas with smaller language resources? Where would it be in, let's say, 10 years? The technology is developing fast, but still we are... in a way, struggling with similar issues than a few years back. So, what do you see the future of automatic assessment would be in the near future? Let's start with our Zoom discussants. Did you hear my question? Okay.
Yeah, I heard your question. So, I think it will gradually be used more and more, but I wonder if it always will be used in a sound way. Already, I think 15 years ago, a test was introduced in the Netherlands for foreigners coming to the Netherlands. And it was a completely automatic test. And it has been used for a couple of years, after which so many people complained and that it was, they had to stop it, in fact. And I studied the test, and I think what the problems were. So people, because there are not enough human assessors, raters, will use technology more and more. But I think we should, experts like us, should help them in making the right decisions when to use it and how to use it. Otherwise, we have seen this also in other areas, that they use improved technology in the wrong way. So that's what I think.
Talks about test misuse. I think that's important. And I think that, the consequences, of using technology, are important to think about it, as they are for any kind of high stakes assessment. I mean, I'm thinking about a context. I'm not very good at predicting the future. I mean, we can all think about avatars, dialogue systems. I know that at present there is a researcher at my university who's been looking at truck drivers' voice quality and using that as a way to predict whether they're too fatigued and need to pull off the road. I mean, there are all sorts of really neat things already going on. And I think that the uses of fully automated assessments, you know, they are being critiqued. I think that they're here to stay. And I think, as Helmer says, their use will continue inevitably. And, you know, there are some contexts, I think Ari alluded to some contexts where there may be possibilities of no speaking assessment at all because, you know, they're just, the teachers don't have the, the language ability and the target language to be able to offer any kind of speech in the classroom. So, a role for formative assessment and the use of technology to at least have some speaking in the classroom, although not ideal. But I'm thinking about a high-stakes context in the UK during COVID, where we've got an education system in the UK that is completely, that is completely assessed by standardized tests. And when test centers closed because of COVID, they introduced algorithms to try to take into account the school that the person was from, and use that to adjust performance indices, because there's a wide sort of disparity in terms of advantaged and disadvantaged schools, and that became completely politically unacceptable. It just ended up exacerbating societal inequalities. And Boris Johnson, the then UK Prime Minister, accused these mutant algorithms of being the problem. In other words, the government of the day was passing the buck. It's not our fault. This is the mutant algorithms, these awful machines gone awry that are, creating this problem. And that's really a problem because the accountability lies with the humans. It should be the humans that are taking responsibility for this and not leveling the blame on the machines. I think that's ludicrous. So that was just one case. I think that there are questions about ethics with this as well. Thank you.
What comes to my mind about the future of automated assessment in high-stakes context is that it's likely to continue to depend on the availability of resources. And so there, it's a question of the size of the language and the size of the economy of the country who develops those or can't develop. So that's sort of an unavoidable kind of a general trend. So I agree with that we will be seeing more of automated assessment across different purposes of assessment. But as I said, I'm particularly interested in kind of a assessments that support learning. So what I'd like to see in more of the high-stakes examinations and tests is that they would actually produce more than just the, let's say, one or couple of overall scores, but they would also provide more feedback on various aspects of learner performance to the test takers, examinees, even if that's not their main function, but the computerization makes that obviously more possible than in the paper age, and particularly if and when the automated scoring algorithms develop, and because unavoidably they consider a vast number of different aspects of performance to come up with, let's say, perhaps only one overall score. So actually they. A lot of that details sort of remains unused, and of course it's also then of course a pedagogical challenge to think about which parts of the number of features that the systems analyze actually can be turned into meaningful feedback, how to whom, and so on. But I think that's the kind of a potential that I see for automated assessment in high-stakes context that's not done yet.
Yeah, I think that makes very much sense what Ari said. So the feedback is something that we should improve, and maybe when we get more data, we can do it. And that is something where the automatic system can help both the teachers and test takers, so they can give feedback to both. And of course, obviously, for self-training, kind of simulating the high stakes systems and then training and preparing for those, but also in the actual high stakes exams to kind of make it more transparent and give some feedback.
I mean, Helmer.
No, go ahead, Talia. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to go on a slightly different tangent. So if yours is relevant to what they were saying.
Okay. So what you're just explaining is what we are doing in a research project at the moment. So it's about children learning to read. And we try to make a report out of their reading aloud. And this is then used for personalized learning so that we can see from the report what are they doing well, what are their problems, and then we can adjust their task, that exercises they have to do. That's exactly what we do. And what is said about data, so for instance, we now one of our projects became a product. It's a reading tutor, and now more than 1,000 children a day are using it, so a lot of data is coming in, more than 1 million exercises a month, so that's great. However, with the GDPR, you do have a problem. You cannot simply use all data for all purposes. So this is really this GDPR that is introduced, I think, mainly for Facebook, Google, and all the other big companies that make wrong use of our data. But this is problematic for research and products for language learning. But I totally agree. So what you said, so that's more formative assessment than probably it's in between. Well, using this to help people to learn better, personalized learning is certainly something promising that we can do. Yeah.
So I was going to go on a slightly different tangent. I mean, we all know about ChatGPT and that this is going to completely revolutionize, I mean, not only ChatGPT, but the competitor products and products to follow, but will revolutionize the jobs of tomorrow. I mean, if you think about I hope that there will be a place for humans in all aspects of the testing process in the future. But already you're seeing companies, even ones that are, I'm thinking of Duolingo colleagues now who are using, ChatGPT models to try to generate items for tests. So we've got sort of machines involved in test development now, These technologies, I mean, this is a competitive market. There is a push to improve them, to make them more accessible. I mean, they're already publicly accessible, but you could think of a multimodal kind of thing coming into play very soon, where you could play a speech sample and then have the algorithm spit out elements of the properties of the speech to describe. And, there are all sorts of different applications. I think that these technologies will continue to advance. I do hope there is still some place, though, for human assessment, be it in some kind of hybrid mode. Obviously these things are all trained on humans. And there was a question about bias as well. I wanted to talk about bias in the context of the human data that the machine is trained on, because we know that implicit associations, for example, women, teacher, nurse, men, engineer, scientist, that these things exist in corpora. And there may be a place, so these societal associations about good and bad, and we know all about implicit biases in psychology, these are embedded in the data that we're training the machines on. So I think that there is some kind of responsibility element in terms of sort of how to mitigate these biases. And I want to go back also, it's a bit of a mishmash of points, but to Helmer's point about what is the standard, what should be the appropriate cutoff in terms of speech. Even if you think about vowel accuracy, what is intelligible, what is not intelligible. I remember I was doing a demo, I was a PhD student, I'm Canadian, English is my mother tongue, and there was some kind of demo of the use of an AI system. It was a virtual patient and doctor chat, and I went on to try to model how it worked, and it was quite embarrassing when my Canadian vowel got rejected as wrong, because the algorithm, had a very restricted cutoff, and I said about or something instead of about, or however they pronounce it. So I mean, these are real, important things, because of course high stakes decisions can be made on the basis of this. And at the moment, the kinds of tasks that are used, as has been raised before, and the what counts as right and wrong. I mean, these are things human raters don't agree on. And if you go back to the assessing speaking literature, to the time of early 20th century and into Robert Latto in the 60s, there were concerns about this subjectivity of human scoring, of scoring of speech, that even if you have a vowel, two people couldn't agree on whether it's correct or incorrect. And this persists. There are vowel intelligibility studies that show that there's not 100% agreement across two highly trained human raters. Even phoneticians won't agree on this 100% of the time necessarily. So in a way, having automated systems kind of allays these problems of subjectivity, but introduces a whole other set of problems, which we've been talking about today. So it is a bit of a revolution. It will be interesting to see what comes next.
Thank you very much. What about interaction? That's an important part of communicative language construct. Do you see that there's any chance in the near future that we could be assessing interaction automatically somehow in language learners' speech?
Yeah, I think Tali already mentioned voice bots or avatars, something in that line. So we are carrying out a couple of research projects with voice bots. Also, that technology is gradually improving. So I think that in the future, we will see more also of that, that you talk to an avatar on the screen, and then you can also, train interaction, but also, of course, assess interaction. It's not human-to-human interaction, that's another thing, but it's simulated human-to-avatar interaction.
What do others think about this?
I'm reminded of Luke Harding's plenary here about a couple of months ago. He was visiting us because event here, what he sort of highlighted was, this is partly my interpretation, was that we need to define what do we actually mean and what is involved and what gets rated even by humans when we rate interactional competence, pragmatic competence. I mean, that's a challenge, which is why there are not that many speaking tests where you actually somehow even human-rated sort of tests, obviously, where actually you have something like discourse management or international competence or whatever you turn-taking behavior, because these are hard to define in a way that people can agree on. So that's one challenge. Then actually Luke was presenting a very interesting case of a piece of negotiation. It was about agreement versus disagreement among two persons talking. And actually the way the interaction unfolded actually took quite a long time, and it was complex. It was over a number of different sort of turns, and actually he presented us as a kind of a case where obviously any automated rating system would sort of really struggle to make some sense of, because I mean, humans could do that when they were paying attention to that. So I see that as a very challenging piece of approach, but it depends on when two persons, be that two humans or a human and a machine, actually talk to each other. Then the question is, what is it that we are rating in them? Because obviously it's probably less of a challenge to figure out that, okay, speaker one has this kind of fluency and pronunciation and so on, and so for the second speaker. But then what are the things that that are part of the interaction between them that we should be looking for, first of all, and then how to sort of measure that automatically? I think that's a kind of a two levels of challenge here.
is I think people are often... let me start another way. So I teach courses in English, so it was obligatory for me to do Cambridge Proficiency of English test some time ago. And I did it, and it's totally manual. And I had to do writing, reading, listening, speaking, and conversation. And while I did it, of course, I was also trying to evaluate the process. And the conversation is quite strange. So you couple to another person that is tested, and you start talking, and somebody in the background is evaluating you. And I think this is very subjective, and it depends on the person you couple to, etc. But nobody is questioning that for some reason. And this is something I see quite often, that if you try to do something automatically with technology, people are very critical and they look at all the problems. But if it's done by humans, they're less critical in a way. And it's good to be critical. And I think before you start using technology for high-stake tests, you should prove that it works, and you should try to find out how to use it. That's like I said before. But I think we should also try to look at what are the possible ways we can use technology. And people are not perfect. Human teachers are not perfect. They are good, and they help people learn languages, and they're good at carrying out tests, but they're also not perfect. So like I said, I think we should look more for ways where can we use technology to help humans, not replace them, but help humans.
I agree with that last point, Helmer, about using technology to harness human assessment. I don't fully agree with the lack of criticality about group assessments and peer assessments, because there has been some published literature in language testing on that. It's not as recent, though, as the technology stuff, but there used to be some heated discussions at conferences over a decade ago, I would say. I think actually there's a special issue on the topic in language testing, but probably from well over a decade ago, I would say. So it probably 2009. You do raise some points. I think with interactional competence, there are other things to think about. I mean, just in terms of the speaking construct being measured, I always wonder who should be assessed for these things. Native speakers probably should be assessed as well. If that part of the speaking construct is relevant, then you can't really presume that native speakers should be exempt from that part of the assessment. I think that there are matters to think about in terms of just what is being measured, what is appropriate. If you want to sort of tap into different interactional patterns, then it's good to do that with a broader construct of assessing speaking. Then always thinking about what is the, like, I worry a lot about machine-driven assessment, where you're introducing tasks because the machine does it well solely, and you're not thinking about what do people have to do in the real world? Learners in classrooms, to succeed in life, or do whatever it is they need to do to integrate and to get that job that they want, or in high-stakes settings, right? What is it? So we always should not lose sight of the kind of what Lyle Bachman has called and Buzz Palmer have called the target language use domain. So there should still, even with the use of technology, be some link between what test takers are being asked to do in the assessment and then what they need to do in terms of the real world language skills. So I think we need to just make sure now and in the future that we don't lose sight of that. And of course, part of the problem with some of the existing fully automated tests is that they're very inauthentic. They might be used for, academic gatekeeping, but they are not academic in terms of their in terms of the kinds of questioning, in terms of the responses that are expected, and so on and so forth. I think that's just an important consideration in all of this.
Perhaps one way to address that would be to think that the, even if it's very challenging for both human and machines to sort of rate interaction, would it be enough that actually the task actually requires that you interact with somebody, even if the focus of assessment is not in that interaction, but actually that there is this authenticity in the fact that actually the test tasks somehow try to capture in interesting and important ways of communicate and interact, and then whatever is possible gets assessed, even if the interaction may be not sort of captured by whatever rating system is used sort of as fully as would be ideal.
Great. I hate to interrupt, but we are running out of time, or we are already over time, but maybe if there are any questions from the audience here or online, we could take one more question, and whoever needs to leave, feel free to leave. But if there are any questions, or are there any questions?
One
question. Okay. Again. Yeah. So. We have one audience question from online. It goes like this. How do you see advancement and use of AI generative engines such as ChatGPT, Bard, etc. in spoken assessment? Would a dialogue with an assessment bot be reliable in the near future? What are the main challenges? Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I can start. So what we have seen already is that given some kind of input, these large language models are able to provide feedback or explanations. So we could think that maybe this could kind of help us to verbalize the feedback into some way that is easy to understand. Something that the human review assessor could write, but it doesn't have time for writing. So it's kind of a helping tool in that. Yes, I guess maybe Ari knows more how is the kind of written language situation at the moment, because clearly ChatGPT can give feedback already now about your essays and your language skills. So
probably, but I haven't explored the issue yet. So.
No, ChatGPT, so it's for chatting, so it's written, it's indeed it's written. So if you can turn it into speech, which is possible, of course, you can, with text-to-speech, you can verbalize the written message. So I think it can be used to simulate a conversation. However, the problem then is that the tests are not standardized. One person might get more difficult sentences, questions, than the other one. And that's something you have to deal with then.
Yeah, I guess they're the same kinds of things that you deal with in human assessments that make them quite inauthentic, right? The scripting that is involved in some kind of standardization across test takers. But I guess there probably is a potential for some kind of adaptive algorithm as well to look at and take into account performance, speaking performance on an initial task, and then to introduce a more complex or a more difficult task that is tailored very much to the learner's, what the machine thinks is the learner's real ability level. There are scoring systems that can do that. So you could see that there is great potential for that kind of thing. I think, Helmer, you were talking about sort of personalized learning. I hear about personalized medicine quite a lot. You know, personalization is something that is coming out a lot, you know, looking at genetic data, trying to come up with sort of, different regimes and predictors of what diseases you'll get, and trying to find ways of mitigating that. And you could see that in learning contexts as well, with systems that can process, complex data, that there might be some kind of way of, improving feedback provision, as Ari was talking about, from the learner, but also adapting the kind of tasks. But in a very kind of fixed way, you might have some kind of STEM task, or initial task to look at, the level. And then from there, the machine would gradually, in an adaptive kind of way, gauge the level and introduce more difficult or easier tasks. And in this way, you could get, You could get some kind of metric of performance ability, you know, from beginner to advanced, potentially. I mean, I think that the opportunities are limitless. It will be interesting to think about how these things evolve and also how the assessment industry evolves. But I think we always need to be kind of critical of having a good critical eye of these processes. And, there will be a lot to talk about and a lot to debate in the years ahead, I'm sure.
Thank you so very much. I think we need to wrap it up now. So I thank you, our guests, discussants, and our local speakers as well, very much for the panel discussion. And on behalf of the Digitala project, I also thank our audience here and online that you have participated and given us very good questions and comments. And if there are any closing words from our project leader, no, then I will close the seminar. Thank you very much.